and I'm second, and then I'll ask you to tell your story about
Bebaw.
Bebaw.
Okay, I am Tinker Walker, and I'm 94, and I've had lots of interesting things in my life, but this is one story that I have really enjoyed, and I think you will too.
Yeah, hi, I'm Harold Walker. I'm the son of Tinker, and it's I'm 62 years of age, and it's Sunday, November 2nd, 2019, and we're in Dallas, Texas, recording for StoryCorps. So, Mom, tell us about your amazing story. Okay. About your doll, Bebaw.
Absolutely, I will do that. I have to tell you a part. The first part of the story is a little bit sad, but it's necessary for you to understand with the rest of it. I was born in 1925 in Buffalo, New York, when I was 1929, my father took his own life and my mother left. So that meant my brother, who was a year older than I, and I were kind of in a fix. But in those days, they didn't send children to orphanages as much as they might later. But at that particular time, they passed this around from family to family and in the family. So, and that was not a good plan. It was not a happy, pleasant, loving life for either one of us, but particularly for me. I grew up, well, let's see, I grew up and I got married, and we traveled quite a bit for my husband's business, and we ended up in Texas, and that was 60-some-odd years ago. I used to have, somebody gave me a little rag doll, this one. This little doll. And because of the situation, I dearly loved this doll. She was my companion. I would take her everywhere with me. She even went to bed with me at night. I just did everything with her. She meant a great deal to me. Well, there we have one of these little things here. okay. When I was 10 years old, we had moved a number of times in our living with our four children. And
so when you were 10 years old, you moved.
Right.
And you and your brother were together, moving from family to family. And I think you're about to say about your doll, how maybe you lost it. Is that correct?
Yes, thank you. And it was very unusual because she was so close a companion to me. But for some reason or other, she just disappeared. And, of course, we had traveled off or moved often enough that I knew that that possibly would happen, and so I was very careful with her, but it she still just
vanished,
was gone. So, as I said earlier, I grew up and got married, and we eventually moved to Texas, and I. 60 years later, 60 years later. A friend of mine in Arlington, Texas, asked if I would like to go to Waco, Texas, to see some historic homes. And she was going with Arlington Women's Club. And I was delighted. Oh, yes, I like to do things like that. So we went. We hopped on the bus, and away we went. We got down to Waco, and I got off the bus and went into the historic home and into the toy room. And who's seated in the corner on a chair but Bebaw? And I am going, oh, 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 I can't believe that's Bebaw. And I went over and picked her up and hugged her and I was just ecstatic. So I kept begging them to give, please give me Bebop. What can I do to have that doll? It means so much to me. They kept telling me that no, she was a museum piece and she could not be sold or given away or anything like that. It was just impossible. So this went on for about 6 months. And finally, they called me on the phone and told me I could come and get Bebop, that they would be, that would be okay. They would, but I had to do such and such. And of course, I did do what they wanted me to do to have the doll. So when I got down there to pick her up, the gentleman that was from the museum director said, now you need to know a few things about Bebop. He said, most dolls are registered. This doll was registered. She was made in the New York State area. She was made in 1929, and I said, that's when I told you. He said there were only 20 of those dolls made.
Wow.
And of the 20 dolls, one of them somehow crossed over 1,200
miles.
I don't know how, and I don't have any idea how she got to Waco. I've never been to Waco, but that one time, I was just absolutely amazed that I finally had Bebop again, and how Bebop got there, I decided must have been the good Lord thing doing it for me, because it meant a great deal to me.
Wow.
So, now, the
20
epilogue,
dolls.
Yeah, 20 dolls, and that's all. And when you think about it, it was a rag doll. How a rag doll would last for 60 years? I know right. The one that they had in the Waco Museum was probably not mine, original doll, but it was my
Bebop.
Doll as far as I'm concerned. Now, the epilogue is, people always say to me, why do you still have the doll? Well, my husband and I had entered a senior citizen housing arrangement. And when we made that trip and moved out of our regular home, I was concerned that something would happen to Bebop in all the trips. Every time you'd move, it seemed like you lost something. And so I decided I would give her to somebody I felt very dear about, and that was my granddaughter, Bea. And so I asked Mia if Bebop could come live with her. Mia, in the meantime, had attended the University of, France. Yeah, France. And so she was living in Germany, and she and her husband and their little girl named Mia. No, the little girl was named Mia. My granddaughter was named Andrea.
Right.
And so I gave it to Andrea and asked her, please, would she give Mia a home as long as she could, and perhaps to pass it down to another child. And I was going to try to write a story about it so that it would be permanent for my great-grandchildren.
Very good.
That's about it. Any questions? Oh, let me tell you this. I think I neglected to tell you that Andrea was in Germany one time, and she was coming back to the States for a holiday. And so she and I Skyped and talked about bringing Bebop with her. And so we decided, when I first got Bebop back, she had some places on her face that had gotten a little bit thin, and I decided I'd better replace that, and I did. And when I had the upper part of her face open, I put an I love you heart in her.
Oh.
And so we decided, when we were talking about bringing her back to the States, that maybe it wouldn't be a good idea, because it happened to be that period of time in the United States when they were very fussy about whatever came into the States on an airplane or whatever conveyance. And I was afraid maybe if they x-rayed the doll to see if there was anything in it, which would be a possible thing at that time, that it would they would wonder what it was and would think that there was something dangerous about it. So I asked Andrew to please keep Biba home. I wanted her to be safe. So that's my story.
So Biba has a home in Germany as we speak.
Exactly.
Sitting on a shelf. And
yep.
Your great-granddaughter, Mia, will now have a doll to have a story about.
Yes. I have actually given the doll to Mia, but she's too young to play with it. And Andrea has it in a glass,
case,
display box. And it was really a very moving occasion for me. I could not believe it when I saw that doll. So
that's an amazing story, Mom. I always get a kick out of listening to it.
Thank you. I appreciate that. So anyhow, as my son, I guess you would be her uncle.
Right.
So.
Oh, okay. Well, let's see. What else can we talk about, Mom? That was the main reason why we're here, mm-hmm. is to talk about your doll. I think that was an always amazing story.
Yeah. I've had
Tell us a little bit about your childhood.
It was.
Oh, and no, I know what I want you to talk about.
What?
Talk about you have a great grandfather my great grandfather that was in the silent movies.
Correct.
Made how many movies?
Over 100. I have his obituary recall from the newspaper when he passed away, and they had listed them, and they had over 100 movies. He naturally, at that particular time, people that were in the movies didn't use their own name. They would take a false name, and I just right at the moment, I can't tell you what that was, but I do have an obituary column of all of his travels and so forth. And he had kind of a fun way of displaying himself. He lived in Minneapolis, and he would go to, he had a clothing factory, made men's clothes. And so he would go to New York City to buy fabric. And very often. So while he was there one day, he was in a bar one evening and somebody approached him. And I'm sorry, I can't think of his name, but anyhow, he was a well-known producer of movies. And he approached great-grandfather and he said to him, I'm looking for somebody who looks very dignified to be in the movies. Could you do that for us? And of course, it was very early in their production. So he said, yeah, he'd do that. So he did it quite a few times, but he didn't tell his family. And so when the first movie came to Minneapolis, he suggested that they all go down and see that movie. And they did. And there they were sitting in the audience, and that was their father up there on the screen.
On the screen, wow. And then wasn't it that their 25th wedding anniversary,
mm-hmm. yep.
they had all kinds of letters and Western Union notices from Calvin Coolidge, the president.
You're right.
As a matter of fact, my sister has, Karen has copies of the originals of the Western Union from Calvin Coolidge and Gloria Swanson. Remember that name?
Mm-hmm.
And what are the other names back in the movie stars from that era?
Oh, golly. If I'd known we were going to mention that, I would have brought
a
list of
it.
But anyhow, it was quite impressive. I mean,
yes.
And for a while, I actually had copies of two of the movies that he was in. And when we took movies of our children when they were small, and the kind of movies that were produced that I bought so that I could see what he did were a kind that we could use on that reel. It had a
reel
on it. You probably remember it.
Mm-hmm.
But anyhow, I'm glad you brought that up because that was interesting.
Yeah, I always thought that's a thing of history, in my opinion. Those Western Union and letters of congratulations on their 25th anniversary.
Excuse me, it was the 50th.
Oh, right? I'm sorry, the 50th wedding anniversary. And what was,
we have a picture.
Yeah, yes, we do at home.
Because there was a party that they gave for them, which also included all the movie stuff. But in the picture, I must be maybe three years old. And I'm sitting on his lap. My brother is sitting on his other knee. And then all of the family, the women, not the men, were in the picture behind him. It's a nice picture.
It's a nice picture. Yeah. It's very distinguished looking. It looks something right out of the
movies.
The movies, correct, yeah. Everybody's all dressed up. And
Was.
I always thought that was a very interesting part of your life.
I definitely agree with you. That, and we traveled a great deal in the last 20 years of our life because your dad had business over in, Europe.
Everywhere, yeah.
We traveled and were in Russia and China. And when we were in China, he didn't realize it, but in Beijing, the children didn't wear diapers. Now, maybe they did in other parts of China, but they didn't that day. And Harold picked up a little boy and put him on his shoulder, and the little boy wet down the back of Harold's shirt. But we saw a lot of interesting things, and it was still a safe time to travel around Europe.
Yeah, you also went right after Desert Storm.
Mm-hmm.
Dad had to be over in, the Middle East. And what was the?
Kuwait.
Kuwait. Thank you, Barry. See, now I'm having a senior moment.
Good.
Kuwait. Mm-hmm. So y'all saw the bombed out shelters. And then you were there. Dad was there replacing fire pumps. That was his business, is fire pumps. For buildings, and so there was lots of pumps that had to be replaced, and that's the reason why you were over there right after that war.
Well, they set the oil fields on fire.
Yeah,
and I remember driving past them and seeing the smoke still coming out of them, and
wow,
it was interesting. Yeah, well, we were in Palestine, India. We were in India. And that was kind of a fun thing. We after he finished his job, he suggested that we take a train ride to the, I've forgotten the name of where we went. But yeah, we went 1,500 miles on this train. It was a tourist train. And at one point, they stopped the train and they said, no, they wanted anybody that wanted to come get on some camels and ride down into the desert and have champagne as the sun was going down. So that's what we did. So I climbed up on a camel, and after I got up there and I was observing the other people, I thought, I better hang on to something because when that camel comes up, it comes up with a jerk, you know. And so I just picked on something to hang on to, but it was the wrong thing because when he stood up, I fell over his head into the grass or to the sand below. And the men that were helping us were all saying, oh, that old lady fell off. I wasn't an old lady. I was only 60 years old. But anyhow. And then I don't know whether you remember about when we were in Russia.
Right, right.
And we went on a small river cruise after his job, and the captain came on at one point and said that the small towns along the Russia on the way to Moscow, that's where they made some of their extra money by putting on performances. So we did that. We watched that. And then afterwards, he said, would you all like some ice cream? Well, ice cream in northern Russia, way out in the country? Okay. So they put us on a bus and took us into a nearby little town. And the little town had absolutely amazed us because we drove up in front of a Ben and Jerry's ice cream store. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you wouldn't expect that in Russia, but we went in, and the first person ordered chocolate. She got vanilla. And the next person ordered strawberry, and they got vanilla. And the next person ordered something else, and they got vanilla.
That's all they had. Yeah.
So 4 years later, we were in Boston, and there was a Ben and Jerry's ice cream store. So I went in, and there was a big sign on the enlarged sign of the story about Ben and Jerry was going to teach Russia there was more than one flavor of ice cream.
Oh, that's interesting.
And I thought, oh my gosh, you didn't make it. You didn't make it. So anyhow, we just had, it was wonderful that Harold took me with him. And we just saw when we were in Ecuador, we went to a restaurant one night that somebody had suggested to us. And when we got in and sat down, there wasn't anybody else in the restaurant but us, and there was no menu. You just took what they served you. So I asked the waiter, well, what kind of meat is this? He said, it was jungle meat.
Now, the jungle meat, now, isn't that the story from Ecuador?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, and that's what you're talking about?
Uh-huh.
I thought you said Russia. I'm sorry.
No, I'm Ecuador.
Ecuador. When you're in Ecuador, that right. I agree. I was going to bring that up.
Yeah,
and so
it was the jungle
meat. So what happened to be the jungle meat?
Well, there were so many monkeys that I couldn't help but wonder if it were monkey meat.
Oh,
I never did get a straight answer from him, but I thought that was really oh, we just saw so many things, and it was a peaceful time, so to speak, in that part of the world, and we could go places and not be frightened or worried or. Which now I don't know whether you could do that, but anyhow, it was wonderful. I really enjoyed it. So,
can you tell us the story about Kaylee making a video, and you really enjoyed being in the video?
Oh yes, Daryl's daughter is in the music industry. And so when she was in college, and I believe it was her senior year, she
right.
had to produce a music production. And she just did she did a beautiful job. But she included both grandfathers, Kim, her mother's
mm-hmm.
father,
mm-hmm.
and my husband and myself. And I had to wear a tutu because I was supposed to dance with a tutu. And mind you, I was like 89, 88, something like that. Anyhow, it was fun because she had different little scenes. We had a poker scene. And at another point, she just did a remarkable job. And it was fun. And I loved dancing in a tutu. I could still walk pretty good then.
The video really had to do with a takeoff of Taylor Swift's Shake It Off.
Uh-huh, exactly.
And what was it called? It was Senior Citizens.
Shake It Off.
Right? I guess it was Shake It Off.
Yeah.
But,
and it's still on YouTube.
Yeah, it's still on YouTube. You can go
and there's been thousands and thousands
YouTube.
Of people looking
mm-hmm.
at it. But, Well, let's see. When I was a little girl, of course, I was kind of a disturbed little girl. But anyhow, we lived with an aunt at one point, and I was about seven, I guess, seven. But anyhow, they had a flat roof on their backyard, on their first floor, dining room and kitchen. And so I walked in my sleep, and I climbed out my brother's window, and I walked across the roof. I actually felt the gutters on my feet. Turned around, went over, and knocked on my aunt's window. And can you imagine her reaction when she opened her eyes and there's this little child looking in the window?
On the second story, correct?
On the second story.
Second story of this, of your house.
Yeah.
In Buffalo. Is this in winter?
No.
No, okay.
I don't recall that it was.
Okay,
you know?
Okay.
But that was the year that I went. No, I was in the fifth grade on this occasion. I don't remember it was the same year. But anyhow, when I went into the fifth grade, and the they had put me in a parochial school because every time we'd move someplace or be taken to move in another family, it would just be all different. We'd start all over in school. So I was in the fifth grade classroom. The nun left the room. And when she left the room, guess who got up and ran around and around and around the room? And I finally caught the pedestal of a display thing on my foot and knocked over the Virgin Mary and smashed all to pieces. I figured I was excommunicated on the spot. So anyhow, we just had lots. Your dad was very, we used to love to camp. Remember that?
Oh, definitely.
And we got a pup tent when you all were smaller, and Dad and I slept in our big tent, which wasn't very big, and the pup, you were on the pup tent. And one night, we woke up, and we looked out the screen of the tent we were in, and I don't know if they call it a covey or what it was, but anyhow, there were about 25 skunks.
Oh, boy.
Out there, right in front of the tent. And I'm hissing at the kids in the next tent, "Don't make any noise, don't go out." But anyhow, there was no problem with that. But
they went away.
Yeah, they just wandered off.
Wandered off.
I didn't know they would get in a large group like that. I don't know.
That's funny. And you were married to Dad 68 years, and he passed in 2015.
Right. Yep. And I lost 20 pounds. How about that? Nothing like making something out of a real bad situation. I missed him. He was a wonderful husband. When I was growing up, I used to say I was not going to marry anybody that smoked or drank or ogled all the other girls. And I got him.
And
I got just
yes,
what I
did.
Wanted. So, anyhow, but he was willing to try anything, and of course, so was I. You know, I was an adventurer, but we did see many. We were in France and Paris and the Eiffel Tower. I wouldn't go up to the very top layer because it was so high. But anyhow, I didn't like that. But we went to all the things that you go to in Paris, and we even saw in the bottom, well, most of the Paris important buildings, I understand, have rooms that are underground and that were used during the war by military people to talk back and forth forth. And there was one area where the Germans were in one end and then a long distance off, but in the same tunnel, the French were in the other end. We saw that. We just saw a lot of things.
Not only that, but you were a teacher for 15 years.
Got a master's
and
degree.
I got a master's degree.
Worked on them.
And you were very creative, making the family all kinds of things, clothes.
Yeah, did the sewing. And now that when my husband passed away, I desperately needed something to keep my mind busy. So I started making
fleece bank blankets.
Yeah, fleece blankets. And I made 90 of them in the first 2 years. And I gave every one of them away.
Yeah.
And since I've been at this new old folks' home, I've made several. And I really get a profound pleasure out of surprising somebody and giving them a brand new blanket, and they're really nice. So that's been a pleasure for me. But with my vision now becoming so impaired and I'm getting older, that I just can't do as much, but I still try to do what I can.
Well, not only that, but for the church, you make all kinds of... you fold cutlery, plastic knives, forks, and put them in plastic bags, and you do what, maybe 300 or 400 a week?
Mm-hmm.
And these forks and cutlery are for lunches, for homeless teenagers.
Exactly.
To have a lunch.
And all week.
All week.
And on the weekends. It's a wonderful program. Yeah.
It's called New Day, and it's a program for teenagers or any age kids that don't have a meal.
And that is amazing to me.
Yeah, but it's amazing that you do, you know, the cutlery for it.
Yeah, because I've gotten to the point where my hands are numb. I guess that's what it's from. But anyhow, we've had a blessed life, honey.
Sure have.
So
we when I was in high school, you made a 2-man horse costume.
Yeah.
Remember that?
I do. you wore it on the couch.
Yeah, it was just a wild idea. We wanted to be a mascot, so to speak, for the football team. And you made us, my friend and I, a 2-man horse costume out of material. And then the head was made out of, like, ceramic or something.
It was a cardboard.
Yeah. Anyway, it was a mask or a
with fur on it.
Yeah, with fur on it. It was green and white, but that was a lot of fun.
Yeah,
doing that.
Well, I appreciate it. Thank you, honey. When I took the children out, the little ones out for lunch, I used to always have dessert first, and they still to this day, they're all grown and have children, but they remember dessert first. And it was interesting to me how the waitresses did not approve of that. I would get scowls.
Oh,
funny, I didn't.
Yeah.
So anyhow, we've had a busy life.
Yes, we have.
Yeah. Anyhow. And I left out a lot of the mean stuff that happened, and I've carried some of those emotional scars with me, but you all have understand and helped me with it. I appreciate that.
You're welcome.
I love you.
I love you too, Mama.
I have a few questions, if you don't mind.
Oh, go right ahead.
I'm wondering, Tinker, if you can talk more, if you're open to talking more about growing up without your parents and what that was like for you.
They didn't tell us that my father had committed suicide. And I didn't find that out until I was maybe almost 10. My mother was a very beautiful woman, but she was an alcoholic. And I think it's important to realize the fact there was a great deal of money in the family, so that was not a problem. But because of it, she was able to. And when she rented an apartment after my father died, and she hired a teenage babysitter, and that was who we were with the first year we were married, or we were orphaned. At one point, they wanted to find somebody that would adopt me, but they wouldn't adopt my brother, and the judge wouldn't allow them to separate us, so they had to take me back, and they really didn't like me. Not because of my behavior, but because they thought that I was not my father's child. I was, because I had a blood test at one point, and I definitely was a member of the family. It was hard. I was alone most of the time. That was why Bebop was so important to me. There were just lots of things that happened. And the worst part of it at all is that I have grown up with scars of not being able to meet and make friends with people. And I've always been a loner. I've had a series of depression, and it's all a scar from that. But because I did choose somebody, Well, he wasn't Catholic and I was, and that was another problem. The family just never had any much to do with me after I married him. But he was a wonderful man, and he had all the qualities I was looking for. And I was very happily married for a long, long time, but the scars are still there. So is that about it? They were just what you would expect.
Yeah. You sort of just talked about how Biba was really important to you because of that, and I was going to ask what role you thought that Biba played in your life then, and when you look back now, kind of how you see Biba.
She was very definitely my friend. And she was really about the only friend I had, because I was neglected. That I just really...
From age 4 to 10, correct?
Well,
yeah, that's when you lost her.
Yeah, and then...
So 6 years.
Yeah. Yeah, she just... She was rag doll. She was a huggable doll. She just... and I desperately needed somebody like that. I desperately needed somebody. And so when I met this gentleman and we married, and of course there were only 2 or 3 people at the wedding, and because it was non-Catholic, he wasn't Catholic, why we couldn't be married in the church, we couldn't have flowers, we couldn't, I mean, it's
a different world.
Yeah, it stuck for 68 years, but I bet I asked him 1,000 times, do you love me? Do you really love me? And that wasn't necessary. I knew he loved me. I just couldn't.
Yeah.
It's still a struggle.
Just insecurities.
Well, it's still a struggle since, you know, he passed away.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a song, Side by Side. And when he was sick, I sang that to him every day. I would go down to be at the hospital when he was there, and I've had a lot of fun and seen a lot of things, and life has been interesting to me, very interesting. But there's always been that underlying problem. So,
and can you describe how you felt when you walked into the historical home in Waco and you saw the other Biba? What were you thinking? What were you feeling?
I couldn't believe it. I just couldn't believe it. And I remember I opened my... Yeah, I just couldn't believe it, that there she was. And yeah. How she got there, it almost had to have been a God thing.
Did you think for a second, that's my doll? Like, were you like, oh my God, that's mine? You knew it was a different one, but...
Well, I accepted the fact. I had no proof either way. But I accepted the fact. I guess I didn't want to take a chance on my thinking. I don't know. I just accepted the fact that it probably wasn't. And it probably wasn't. I don't even know how she got from Buffalo to where Waco.
Right, right. And there was only 20 made.
Yeah.
That's amazing to me.
It is. It really, and that it would last, a doll would last 60 years.
60 years, right.
It was amazing.
That's funny.
It is. It really is. And I've tried to write a book about it, and I illustrated it. But there have been several people that have wanted to take the book and make it something that they would write. And
it wasn't your story. And to tell you the truth, that's the reason why we're here today, Mom, is to have your story.
A Biba, yeah. Because it wasn't it. How all that started was it? A friend of mine, a woman, said that her granddaughter needed a summer project in school, and would I mind very much? She knew that I was interested in writing this book. Would I mind very much if I talked to her and she did something with it. It would be very good training for her, and she would enjoy it and give her something to do. And, oh, yeah, okay. One of my failings is that I'm very quick to give things to people. I shouldn't have, but I did. And she illustrated it, and she wrote the story and so forth. But she didn't. It didn't sound at all like me. And what I had wanted really was where I'm talking to my great grandchildren and I'm telling them this amazing story about a little doll. And so that kind of ballooned. And she actually took me out for lunch one day, and they had it put into a book. There was a hardcover book, and there were illustrations. It's beautiful, but it isn't my book. It's not my story in the way I would replace it. Mm-hmm. So anyhow, it's because of my vision, I can't read what's on the paper, and I can't do much with it myself. And I have another friend that wants to take the book and write it, because it is a good story. And but she's very controlling, and she changes everything, and my nature is not that I can argue with her about it. So I just have put it away and haven't done anything with it.
Well, thank you for answering my questions.
No, glad to. But I appreciate this opportunity.
Yep, that's exactly why we're here.
Yeah. So now, did you say you were going to make a recording of this?
Well, it's being recorded now.
Oh, okay.
So we're going to be silent now for 10 seconds.